So sometimes you have a mix of people. You might have 9 people who work together and one person who's just come along that doesn't know anyone. And this natural hierarchy develops there as well, where they're afraid to kind of voice their thoughts or you know, be a bit braver in speaking out.
Yeah, and we saw some groups where you had some quite strong personalities that were basically doing all the wrong things at times.
You're listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar podcast, talking all things fundraising, charities, nonprofits, and more. Here's your host, as always, Simon Scriver.
Hello, and welcome to another episode. As I mentioned in the last episode, we are kind of in the midst or at the end or thereabouts of conference season. And I'm just back from a whole bunch of conferences, speaking and presenting workshops and running seminars and doing everything we do at conferences. One of the strange things I was doing at a conference, you might have seen me mention, is I was co-running the fundraising escape room. And I'm going to get into what that is and everything about that. But I have my lovely guest today to help me talk about it because she is an expert in all these things. And she set it up with me. My guest today is Beata Sorum. Hello, B.
Hiya. Nice to finally be on your podcast.
I know. Well, you've kind of done cameos before, but you've never...
I have. Yeah.
Given your opinions.
It's kind of weird that the first time I'm on it, it's as an escape room expert. I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's strange because you definitely have opinions. You have a lot of opinions.
For sure, yes.
And so it is surprising that the only time I'm giving you a platform for those opinions is on escape rooms.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go on.
Usually people give me platforms to talk about fundraising or digital in particular, design, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, today is escape rooms.
Well, you are a fundraising expert. There's no denying that. And you have a lot of platforms about that. But before we get onto the escape room, maybe you could just tell our listeners who on earth are you, B?
Sure, yes, I can. So I'm the famous Norwegian fundraising expert. There aren't that many of us, so it's very easy to be the one. I've been doing fundraising for about 10 years now. Consultant for the last 5, and I do all kinds of fundraising really, but digital has been my a key area. Like, I get really passionate about the intricacies of a well-designed donation form and a landing page and all that. Based in Oslo, but I work all over the world. And I also get to travel to all the fantastic conferences around the world. So that's nice.
Yeah. And in fact, we first met at, I think it was the Northern Irish fundraising.
Yes, we did. Yeah. You were impressed by my slides.
I was really impressed by the design of your slides. You're an amazing artistic person online, and you're one of my go-to people for all digital advice because you're the bee's knees.
Oh, well, thank you. That's nice.
So one of the things we do together before we get onto the meat of the topic is we've run a couple retreats in the Norwegian mountain all around fundraising, and I'm going to park that. But it plays an important role because it was on the train back from it that you and I started talking about escape rooms.
Yeah, so this was we had 4.5 hours going through basically woods and nothingness on train. So, you know, you get your creative juices flowing. And I think this was a time period where you were particularly obsessed by escape rooms, having never done one before, but you know, with us being on a fundraising retreat, we wandered onto the surprisingly successful topic of fundraising escape rooms, and so we came up with it, and we had a lot of fun. I remember on that train trip coming up with all the different possible tasks that we could put in an escape room.
It was just like a massive brain dump for us. And it was really, I mean, the possibilities were kind of limitless, but the framework we were working in was an escape room with a fundraising theme. It was made for fundraisers. It was made for nonprofits. So for people listening who maybe don't even know what an escape room is, how would you explain an escape room? And then how would you explain a fundraising escape room?
Well, traditionally, you get to a location, there's some kind of story, you know, you might be, the one that we did together in Amsterdam last year was themed around like a fake Charlie and the Chocolate Factory theme, where you get locked in a room, you're told some kind of story of why you're in a hurry. So for us, it was those grandparents were coming back or something, and we were in their apartment looking for the golden ticket, trying to steal it. And you get like a series of clues and puzzles that you have to solve in order to sort of get out of the room physically, because you're basically locked in a traditional one. For our fundraising escape room, we haven't actually locked anyone in yet, although we did toy with the idea of seeing if we could remove all the door handles, and decided it would probably be a bit too much of a fire hazard. But for us, it's the end goal is raising enough money not to be fired. So
so our particular fundraising escape room is, the premise is you're in an office, you have a shitty boss, and he has said you have 1 hour or 45 minutes or whatever to find 20,000 euros, which is in the room. But he's made it really difficult by locking it all up, and there's all clues around, and someone's trying to help you and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so our mean new boss, Nigel St. Nige, has come in, and he's demanded that you raise 20,000 euros or you will get fired. But fortunately, he has already fired another fundraiser who has left clues around, and he might have left some letters, and he wants to help the current team not be fired.
People really struggle to get their heads around it until they do it. And I think you and I were the same before we did our first one. We were like so intrigued and excited by it, but we were like, what the fuck is this? And then when we did it, if you remember, we started off and it took us like, because it was me, you, John Lepp, Jen Love, and Nikki Bell. It took us like 20 minutes to solve the first puzzle.
We
just could not, we didn't understand what kind of thing you were looking for.
Yeah, because you overcomplicate things with an escape room. Oftentimes, like for what you just mentioned, we were physically locked to a bed with handcuffs, which I don't know. It's
Amsterdam.
I don't know. Yes, being locked to a bed with five of your closest friends—that's nice. What we had to do was find a key, but we were trying to like pull stuff off the walls and sort of see if there was some kind of magic combination that was let us out of there. But really what we had to do was grab a stick and reach for the key that was just beyond reach. So,
Well, the other thing we had to do, I think it was even before that, if you remember, was we needed a three-digit combination. And it was, the shelves were in the shape of digits. So there was like a shelf in the shape of a three, a shelf in the shape of a zero, shelf in the shape of five, whatever. And none of us saw it. Because
you get that tunnel vision.
Yeah.
You don't see the things that are straight in front of your face.
Yes.
Because of the pressure of the environment. You just don't take the time to like look at the things that are right in front of your face.
Absolutely. And that was one of many I would say lessons you and I had. And that really became the point of it. And this is why, you know, a big chunk of why we developed it, and we realized that it's a great team building exercise for fundraisers, for nonprofit staff, because essentially when you and I ran it, I mean, we ran it last week at IFC in Holland. When we ran it, me and you were basically just sitting there looking at a team fall apart or looking at a team come together.
Yes, absolutely. That's a brilliant description of it. It was so much fun, like watching how different people approach this process of problem solving, which it really should be. But you get just by putting that sort of artificial time constraint on it, saying you have 45 minutes or you're fired, that putting that pressure on just gives people incredible tunnel vision. And just one example, you know, in our you know, escape room that fits in a suitcase that we bring to just some regular office space, we have some things that are hidden away, and they are obviously not all going to be, you know, within your normal eye level. Some things are going to be hidden in a low place. Some things are going to be hidden in a high place, but they're mostly hidden in quite in plain sight if you just look for it. But because of that tunnel vision that sets in when the pressure is added, people just don't see it, which I found to be quite quite interesting. And I think that has a strong parallel to how a team performs when there is some pressure in their actual work life as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have to be careful about spoilers in here. But one of the things you're referring to is whenever we put something on the ceiling, or whenever we put something underneath, especially the ceiling, it just took so long for anyone in the room to find it. Nobody looked up.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was trying to do without adding the spoiler that you just said. We can't put anything on the ceiling anymore now.
No, we can. We definitely can. Because I still think, well, firstly, most people don't listen to this podcast. But also, I still think when you get into that pressure zone, you forget these things. You gotta, because everyone in the room is smart. Everyone is, you know, almost everyone is smart. Everyone's rational. Yeah. But it's just suddenly you're in an environment which does something to your brain and it stops you looking around. If you had time, if you were relaxed, maybe if it was just you, you would look up, you would look around.
Yeah, and so I mean, the way that our escape room was laid out now at the IFC, there were a couple of pieces of a puzzle, and you could sort of immediately see some of the pieces. And to me, I find it like mind-boggling that people then don't go, okay, here are, you know, three pieces of a puzzle.
Yeah.
I wonder if there are any more. Let me search the room.
Yeah.
But they don't. They just like, they go, we have these three pieces. Now let me frantically go do all the other stuff around here.
Yeah.
Rather than sort of methodically go about, okay, this probably means something. Where can I find the rest of it?
Yeah. That was a consistent thing that it was like, here, you know, why would you not try and complete it? Because as well, the puzzle and other elements in it, they essentially reveal step-by-step instructions, really clearly spelled out instructions of what to do next. Yeah. So people would not read what was created on that jigsaw puzzle. And if it was incomplete, there would be no kind of thinking, oh, we should complete this because then we could read it. People just frantically kind of ran around and started to, I mean, I don't really know what they were doing.
I don't know. They just ran on to the next thing, I guess. And they, but of course, I mean, it is difficult because there are decoys in a room like that, right? So you never really know if the thing you've found is important. But I would have thought people would take slightly more time thinking about whether it could be important or reading the few letters that you did have access to with an incomplete puzzle. They just rush on to the next task. And what was also quite interesting to me is that tendency to overcomplicate things. Because even when you had like the full-on instructions on mostly, or more or less the full-on instructions on all the puzzle pieces, they'd still kind of look for if there were any hidden clues in there rather than actually read the thing, which gave them the exact instructions to do it. They'd like try to see if there was a hidden code within those letters or... So that was interesting to me.
I mean, that's an interesting thing around the whole world, not just the escape room, is this inability we have as humans to read instructions.
Yeah.
And even like my son's mother, my ex, you know, one of the things she does if she buys anything, she refuses to read the instructions. She won't read them. and she'll sooner ask me to read them and give her the summary.
I thought mostly men did that.
What?
I thought mostly men did that, refused to read the instructions.
Yeah, well, I mean, our relationship was strange because we were kind of reversed in our stereotypes, in our gender stereotypes. But for me, like when I was a kid, you know, this is me showing I'm a real nerd. When I bought computer games as a kid, before I played the computer game, I would read the manual from start to finish.
Yeah.
And then it gives
you an advantage, right?
It tells you
exactly what they're there for.
And I could never understand my friends who just put the game in and start playing. Because this is before the days where they had like tutorials inbuilt in games. So why as humans are we not reading instructions? Let's bring it back to fundraising. We have like certified things that work. We have lots of blog posts, lots of books, lots of teachings out there that tell us how fundraising works and is proven to work, and yet we still don't do it. Why?
No, we still want to try new stuff to see if maybe something if I put my own twist to it, maybe that would be better. And it's like, no, usually it's not. You know, people have tried this out. There's a reason why 99% of us do the other thing.
So I mean, I guess is that one of our first lessons from the escape room? That was, you know, not all teams that did it, but a lot of teams, yep, is they need to do things thoroughly. They need to look for things thoroughly.
Finish one task at a time.
Yeah, and read things thoroughly, and as opposed to just flitting about. And actually, this is something I'm struggling with at the moment with my own personal organization. Is I suddenly realize I'm trying to do five things at once, or I have five tabs open at once, as opposed to doing one to the end.
Yeah, I think it also, like, this inability to read the instructions bit has to do with also looking at what is it sometimes our managers are saying to us. Because they might say that they want something, and because we're stressed, we just go about doing it rather than taking the time to maybe sit down with them, have a conversation, ask them, why do you want this? What is it you're trying to achieve? So that we can sort of understand, because the thing they might be saying that we should do, we might disagree with it, but we don't take the time to understand what's at the basis of their concern. And if we did that, we could actually talk to them about why we choose to do things differently, because we have the same objective as them. But again, since we're stressed, we basically don't take the time to understand the instructions coming from our managers and just plow ahead with what we know is a lesser solution.
Which pisses us off and demotivates us and doesn't help anyone.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And is that a hierarchy thing? Because this is one of the other things you and I saw in there, is these hierarchies develop in the escape room, or they're brought into the escape room. You know, if you have managers there's obviously a weird dynamic.
Yeah.
And actually, because one thing we haven't made clear is, like, there's up to 10 people in the room at a time.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have a mix of people. You might have 9 people who work together and one person who's just come along that doesn't know anyone, and this natural hierarchy develops there as well, where they're afraid to kind of voice their thoughts or you know, be a bit braver in speaking out.
Yeah, and we saw some groups where you had some quite strong personalities that were basically doing all the wrong things at times, which was and the rest of the group sort of just goes along with it rather than create the discomfort of saying, look, I disagree with you. We're kind of primed to just not, generate waves on the ocean. We kind of just say, okay, well, fine, let's do it your way.
And it's
an important one. If you disagree, just say so.
Well, yeah, which is, it's easy for, you know, maybe someone like you who's very strong-willed.
who has an inability to not say when I disagree.
I'm glad you said it. But obviously there's people out there who, you know, it's very, whether they're introverted or whether they're, you know, whatever's going on for them, it's hard to raise your voice in that circumstance.
Absolutely.
And so what happens is you go down the road of the person with the loudest voice, as opposed to the person that, and there's been a lot of talk about this. I mean, me and Nikki Bell were presenting about this, and one of the things she was talking about was creating a space so that everyone's voice could be heard. So it's almost like what we didn't see in the escape room is, I would have loved to see the group go round and say, okay, what do you think? What do you think? What do you think? As opposed to who chimes up the loudest and everyone else just kind of goes, because we saw people being like, this is stupid, this is wrong. Yep. But we're going to do it anyway.
yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of like, I mean, there's one thing, I don't have a lot of humility, but I am very self-aware about that thing.
Yeah.
So I know that when I'm in a room, I tend to dominate it, which means that I, for myself, make sure that I do that thing to say, listen, I don't want to dominate the room. Let's make sure everyone else also speaks up. And if I'm in a group where other people dominate, I also try to take that role. So I would have liked to see someone else in those groups, sort of, who are not maybe those people demanding the room all the time, but who are also the ones who are not afraid to speak up, or not afraid is the wrong word, but you know, you get what I mean. Sort of do that, take that role and say, listen, let's hear everyone out. I think that's a good person to have on a team.
And I think that's fair that that is a skill you have, is that self-awareness, because there's nothing wrong with being outspoken, and I love you for it, but it is that self-awareness that you do know there's other people in the room that aren't like you.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
I think that's something we saw struggling in the escape room in existing teams, but also new teams, because they just didn't know, is this person not speaking because they have nothing to say, or is this person not speaking because they can't speak out? I mean, one of the funniest and most challenging things is seeing someone in the room saying the correct answer, and everyone else in the room is just plowing ahead with something else. But there's someone just kind of muttering to themselves, "Well, I think the code is 7926," and it's like, that is the code.
That is the code. Speak up, but yeah, they didn't. But the other thing, I think we saw also the like, to contrast with those people who might dominate the room but not necessarily know what they're doing. There were also people dominating the room that did know what they were doing. But to contrast with that, with these groups, is what we saw when you have those people who might be particularly the introverts and the ones not being in the fray of it, like speaking all the time and shouting out, to sort of take a step back and wander around the room and sort of like look at their circumstances, take a breath, sort of take that little time out to think. And they would suddenly find new clues that the rest of the group hadn't seen yet. So that was sort of always a good preamble for us to know that, okay, something's going to happen now, is when you saw someone take that step back and start walking around the room.
That's funny. Yeah, it's true. And actually, I hadn't really kind of put my finger on it until you said it, but it is. It's like you would see someone step away, almost go into themselves a little bit, and just kind of start to see the cogs whirring in their brain, and they'd look around, and then suddenly they'd find it, and everyone else who was like almost like on a table, just like jumping at each other and trying to scramble through something, they weren't making any progress. So what is that? Is that like a change of scenery, or is it just changing the way your brain works, or?
I think it's like the lesson is to make sure that you do take that time out and give yourself the time to think. So I see this myself now, when we're in Christmas campaign territory, right? Everything is super stressful in order to be able to finish things. But if you don't take that time out, whether that is stepping out of the office, going out for a cup of coffee by yourself, or it's locking yourself away in a room away from your colleagues for a bit, or it's really just taking a home office day even, it's like making sure that we create those spaces to think for ourselves is important.
It's lovely. I had a meeting the other day, and just by strange what are circumstances, it turned into like a walking meeting. So we had like a half hour walk, and that's how we did the meeting. And it was unbelievable how much ground we covered, metaphorically and physically. But how much ground we covered, and how many ideas came out, and how many actually conclusions we made, as opposed to sitting in a stuffy office.
And then you're not distracted by your electronics, that while you're
True.
looking at the meeting agenda, you're also quietly checking your emails and doing all kinds of other stuff. So yeah, taking a walk, I guess, is the lesson.
You and I are very guilty of that, aren't we? Just like
Yes, 100%.
messaging each other during meetings.
Yeah.
What were the other highlights for you during this? Because we saw a lot of like famous characters coming in into the escape room, people like Stephen George and Howard
Yeah.
Lake. And we saw, we obviously met a lot of new people because we just had this kind of constant flow of people from the conference coming in. Any other highlights that jumped out at you?
Well, speaking of Stephen George, I thought it was really funny to watch the consultants in the room, because they just immediately went for the whiteboard and started sort of scribbling around, like, all right, what do we know? Where are these things? Let's put them together, put it all on the whiteboard. Which I don't think, I mean, it didn't hurt them, but I also don't think it helped them much. So that was a fun one. Another favorite of mine was we had two groups from the same organization, and the first one was staff led. So it was basically the people who do the work on a day-to-day basis, and they did so well. They came in, they solved all the puzzles, and they finished with less than a minute left on the clock, and it was all super great. And then after them came a group of basically more or less board members and managers, And they just went to town on our escape room. Like, they wrecked everything. They threw chairs and furniture around, and it was all. And I don't think they solved a single actual puzzle, but somehow they still ended up with the money in hand at the end of it. And I still have no idea how they did it, but breaking everything, not doing anything as you're supposed to, and still ending up winning. And if that's a metaphor for the difference between staff and management, I don't know what is. So.
Well, it was funny because they there's a lot to unpack about that, because they came in and they smashed a lot of shit, and they basically ripped open stuff as opposed to solving the puzzles. And so in their eyes, they won.
Yes. Yeah?
They won the they got the fake 20,000, like the paper 20,000 euros that we had given them. And then there was a real key at the end, that because we were like, you know, you've cheated, you've robbed everything, and that's fine. But do you want to go back and try and do all the puzzles together and see? And they said, or some people on the team said, no, we'll take the win.
Half the people didn't want the win.
But the outspoken people wanted the win and wanted to finish. Yep. And so what was interesting about that is they missed, you know, I think they forgot why they're doing it.
Yes. Yeah.
And they're doing it, A, for entertainment, because you're solving puzzles and it's really satisfying solving the puzzles. And B, you're doing it for this educational team purpose, which is to learn to work together as a team, which is to learn stuff from each other and all that. So they missed both of those elements, which essentially is the only element.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the reason.
That is exactly it. There's no other reason to do it. Like, you don't get a prize for having sort of raised the fake 20,000 euros. Like, your prize is the fun that you've had and maybe what you've learned about your coworkers, right?
Yeah.
But they got none of that. So
it was like they queued for a roller coaster and then they went through the exit, as opposed to riding the roller coaster.
I'm done now.
Yeah, I've done the roller coaster. This is what the exit looks like.
No, you haven't, but all right, if you want it, you know.
It was really strange.
Who am I to judge? Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what the lesson there is, except maybe managers and board members are dickheads, but it's...
and yet they somehow still end up with the money, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's reflecting on what you're actually trying to do, what the actual end goal of this is. Are you just doing this because this is what you do, or what are you trying to get out of this?
Yeah, and I guess there's I mean, let's not put too much on these people who might have just gone about things the wrong way, but I think it's, I mean, there's an ethics thing in there, right? It's how do you get your end goal?
Really?
Yeah, I know. Yes, because... I mean, there are 1,000 shortcuts we could take in our everyday lives as fundraisers, but that doesn't mean it's right to do that. You know, we should make sure that we are doing the right things for the right reasons.
Ouch.
I know.
Yeah. No, that's
profound, right?
Yeah, that is profound, but I think it's fair. I think it's true. But I mean, maybe they didn't want to do it. Maybe they got roped into doing it or something. Yeah. So we're not going to hold it against them forever. But it was really annoying.
No, but it made me think about, we have to buy stronger stuff that isn't as easily broken. So they cost everyone else. They cost us a bit of money, you know.
That's so true.
Again, that's another lesson. When you do things in an unethical way, and is someone has to pay the bill.
Yeah, and it was me and you. Yeah, you're so right. let me just reverse a little bit, because the last thing I want to talk about, you mentioned him briefly, is Stephen George, and not to pick on Stephen George, but he did put his consultant hat on, which I loved. One of the things he did, which was really good, was he was like, okay, here's all the numbers, here's all the codes we found so far, here's all the locks we have, and here's all the things we're trying to open. Which of these go together? And I thought that was a really lovely systematic thing. And I love that. But at the same time, he was very consulted. He was like, why are we raising 20,000? What's the call to action? And it's like, Stephen, that has fucking nothing to do with
this. What's the charity? What do they stand for? That was the overcomplicating bit.
Yeah.
Another group that did really well is because all of our clues are sort of spread about, and there's different tables. And most of the groups basically kept things where they were, so they weren't necessarily seeing different things that might go together that might give you the solution. Whereas one group, they basically gathered everything on the floor and sort of methodically went through all the things they had and said, right, which of these things go together? Which things have we already used? Now let's get rid of them so they don't complicate the picture. So they were clearly a very well-functioning team.
They were maybe my favorite group, actually, because a lot of them didn't know each other. We had, like, you know, it was made up of like five different groups or something, but they were really organized, and they actually it felt like they all had a voice, and they were all, like, you know, kind of talking out loud and communicating. So if
and
some
listening.
Person, yes, absolutely. Yeah. If one person had a question, someone else might have an answer. And that was really key, is sometimes we would see people walking around who were like muttering the answer to someone else's question. And just they weren't, neither were talking loud enough for the other person to hear it.
Yeah. And you'd see two people standing right next to each other holding like two halves of a puzzle and just not communicating at all. Like, and they'd even be saying it like loud enough for the other person to hear, but they were just not listening to what anyone else was saying because they're so focused on like churning through the tasks in front of them.
Oh my God, it was so much fun.
It was. Yeah, that's the biggest lesson. Escape rooms are really fun.
Yeah, it was like frustratingly fun, and the people who did it, and in fairness, the majority of people got out and cracked it, and it was just like people were so happy. It was lovely.
It was so lovely.
All right. Okay, I'm gonna wrap this up, but I suppose the fundraising escape room, it's still out there. We are aiming on bringing it to more conferences. We also run it in charities and in agencies as like a team building exercise. We set it up in their office, in a meeting room, and it does all these things.
So we come to your charity and sort of set up the escape room. You do the escape room bits, that's the really fun bit, while we watch you and take notes of all the things you do right and wrong. And then we sort of break that down with you after to say like what were the strengths and the weaknesses in the way your team worked, and we sort of get to the bottom of how your team is functioning and what you can do to improve it.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I don't want this to sound like too much of an ad, but totally it is an ad, because you should do it, because it's just like everyone loves it. It's just hilarious.
Or we can just come do it for fun if you don't want the work bit after.
Yeah, let's just do escape rooms more. I wish that was my full time job, was doing escape rooms.
So, you know, pay us to come do an escape room is what we're saying. We want to do it more.
So anyone who's listening that wants to bring the escape room to their country, to their conference, to their office, to wherever, you can find details of it at changefundraising.com/escape room. Or you can contact me, Simon Scriver, or you can contact B. And B, where do people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter, where my handle is, well, this is going to be difficult because it's in Norwegian, you know, Beata Sorum.
I'll put a link to
put it in writing somewhere, or my website is going to be finally up within a month or so, 5 years after that I started the company, so you'll find it at bbold.no.
why do good digital agencies never have websites?
It's well, you know, it's that the son of the shoemaker has no shoes kind of thing. Because you want to do it right, and you want it is a phrase. Yeah,
that's
the only
phrase.
Child running around with no shoes on, because you don't get around to doing your own stuff, and you want to do it right, and so you think about it more than if you were just slapping something up there,
All right. Well,
but
congratulations
now,
on that.
It's taken me
all right
in a month. Don't check
and
yet.
So you don't just do escape rooms. So let's just make that clear as well.
Yeah.
You also.
I do a lot of conference talks, or workshops, social media workshops, digital fundraising workshops, and I do consulting, obviously, helping out with, improving your fundraising, making websites. And I do that.
Bea does a lot of stuff. She's an excellent speaker. You don't need me to do, because Bea also doesn't do Humble. And so as it says on her business card,
it literally says that on my business card, yes.
But no, you are a great speaker. I always love seeing you speak, so people should get in touch with you after they do the escape room. They
Yes,
should
absolutely.
talk to
You know what? That's a good package deal, because if you
him.
do ask us to come do an escape room, both you and I will also be happy to do other talks as well. So you can
No,
get
well,
our expertise and our fun.
absolutely. And every conference we've done in Matt so far, we've combined it with running sessions as well. So it's a nice cost-effective way to make your conference different, to make people happy, and just to be awesome.
Yes.
It's great. All right. Okay,
Good finishing
B,
note.
thank you very much for finally coming on my podcast properly. One day we might get you back on to talk about digital
Yeah,
or
let's do
let's
that.
talk more about escape rooms.
Yeah, I can do both.
Good, perfect.
All right.
All right, thank you very much. I'll talk to you again soon, B.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Simon Scriver's Amazingly Ultimate Fundraising Superstar Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and head over to changefundraising.com to learn more or get in touch with Simon. Or don't, whatever, you're big enough to make your own decisions.
Hey, this is Simon Scriver.
And this is Nikki Bell.
We are running a virtual fundraising conference on November 19th. It's called Fundraising Everywhere, and you can find it at fundraisingeverywhere.com.
There's some amazing speakers that we've got lined up for you. We've got some names on there that you will be familiar with and some speakers that you may not have heard before, but all of them will be sharing amazing fundraising methods that are proven to work, and they will be teaching us how to do that in our own charities.
We've tried to make it really affordable for all organizations, but for small charities, it is completely free.
Free.
So go look at it at fundraisingeverywhere.com, register now, join us. It will be accessible, it will be affordable, and it is amazing.
Yes.